Sports Radio 1290. CFRW, Winnipeg. All sports.
I'm still shaking right now. I'm just so honored to be included in this draft class.
All the time. Sports Radio 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
I'm going to question the music selection.
Dance Mix 92, baby.
Too Unlimited? Come on, move this. Is that Too Unlimited?
I don't know.
That's Remus.
This is awesome.
Tim, is that Too Unlimited?
Shake that body. What?
Technotronic.
Oh, damn it.
Yeah, Remus is giving us the thumbs up. Come join Remus. Go to the Illegal Curve chat room, www.illegalcurve.com. Follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And you can always give us a phone call in studio, 780-1290, area code 204-780-1290, if you're calling from outside the perimeter. I actually don't know how far outside the perimeter you can be.
It's about 15 minutes.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Stonewall, I know, is not long distance.
Thanks for that, Drew.
You're welcome. That's almost as relevant as you saying 8 is close to 10.
It's only 2 away.
Attaboy, Ezzy. Much like Stonewall's only about 15 minutes away. Anyways, it's time to go, statistically speaking, around the NHL, look into a little deeper into some of the important stats that make up this game of hockey that we love so dearly. Richard, let's start with Keith Yandle. Some people are talking about him as a potential Norris Trophy nominee for the coming out of the Phoenix Coyotes. You say he can't win the Norris because he plays 48 seconds per game on the penalty kill.
Exactly. I mean, if you're a defenseman, in the Norris Trophy, you have to play in all situations. And he doesn't. Doesn't play significantly enough for the penalty kill, and he's really the knock on Yandel for years and years and years has been his defensive prowess. Now it's improved. He's improved significantly, but it doesn't mean he's there yet. And people, you know, that's what happens. One guy writes an article, and everybody's on the bandwagon. He's a Norris Trophy. No, he's not, because he's not in the same class as a guy like Nicholas Lidstrom that can play in every single situation. It can be trusting. You can put him on the power play. You can put him on the penalty kill. You can put him on even strength, and he's good to go. And until you do that, you can't be a Norris Trophy winner, as far as I'm concerned.
Richie, I think that just goes to offensive defensemen always getting Norse nods.
That's fair.
I mean, Mike Green, tons of defensive shortcomings, same thing.
Does anybody really have a problem if Nicholas Lidstrom was to win the Norris Trophy every year?
No, not really.
It's his to lose. I mean, he's got it.
I mean, I would think he's going to win it this year.
This year he's got it again.
Some people talk about Charlotte. Regardless, whoever it is, guys.
Yeah.
My vote goes for Lidstrom, but whoever it is.
They have to play it all
around. You have to play in all situations. Sure. You have to.
Yeah, that's legit. Speaking with defensemen who don't play on the penalty kill, that takes us to Lubomir Vishlovsky and Dustin Byfuglien. They're the only, they play less than that on the penalty kill.
Out of the top 25 defensive, out of the top 25 defensemen who log, you know, the most minutes. So top 25 minute defensemen, time on ice overall.
So if you play 20, they're up the top in terms of defensemen who play many minutes per game,
that's right.
But very few of those minutes on the
Yandle
penalty kill.
Yandle plays about 48 seconds per game on the penalty kill.
Yeah.
Vishnovsky plays less, and Byfuglien plays less than that. So take all three of those out of the equation, as far as I'm concerned, for the Norris Trophy.
They're just automatic.
Which are all guys that have been bandied about.
Take them all out.
That's why people, I think, honestly, Richie, I think not just members of the media, I think fans are fixated on high-scoring defensemen. I mean, that's great, but look at Byfuglien, okay? Byfuglien was at a point-per-game clip for the first 40 games, Drew.
Yeah.
And people are talking about, oh, Byfuglien's a... for sure, Norris candidate. And then he went, 20 games without a point. And
how's that contract look now?
Exactly. And then all of a sudden people are talking about how Byfuglien's been a disappointment in Atlanta. He's not a Norris candidate. He only had 40 good games. So, I mean, Richie's right here. I mean, a defenseman, scoring is just a small part of what a defenseman does. Let's not forget what a defenseman's supposed to do. It's supposed to shut down the other team's forwards. That's their main, look at their job description. That's number one there, right? Move the puck is obviously huge out of your own zone, but...
But you're absolutely right in that. You can't be you shouldn't be a one-dimensional defenseman and be eligible, or not, and be really considered for the Norris Trophy. That I would agree with. For all of his struggles this season, how he's having a down year, and, what's wrong with him? We've heard those conversations. Alex Ovechkin leads the NHL in even strength points.
Yeah, it's funny when you have a down year and you're still leading the league in even strength points, and you're still putting the puck on net more than anybody in the National Hockey League. At the end of the day, I mean that's proves his talent, and him and Backstrom haven't been as good as they would like to be. But let's be real.
Yeah,
that is tied with Daniel Sedin for even strength points. it's amazing to think that this is an off year for him, quote unquote.
That is a team.
Now, Crosby would be leading if he was.
Yeah, if he was healthy. But, you know, Ovechkin has been healthy the whole year. That is a team. The Washington Capitals are a team that nobody is talking about, and they are percentage points behind Philly for the lead in the Eastern Conference.
Yep, and they've gone on this crazy winning streak. They're playing better defensively. The guys they've picked up, except for maybe Marco Sturm, have been worked out great.
Fair enough, and the Arnott injuries hurt them, though.
Yep. Yeah, Arnott's out, so I mean...
Week to week, quote-unquote. Who knows what that means.
Yeah, exactly. When week to week doesn't give me that much confidence, let me tell you. But, I mean, literally, they are percentage points behind... I mean, granted, Philly's got three games in hand on them.
Yeah, and they're not going to finish first.
But Washington, they're struggling. What's wrong with Washington? What's wrong with Ovechkin? What's wrong... Oh, look, they're fine. They're in the second place in the Eastern Conference.
Change your style. They look good.
Yeah, they do look good. They look better this year than they did last year when they were high-flying and everything else.
Better defensively.
Yeah, and we'll talk about Bruce Boudreau later on in the show.
Better defense. I mean, from last year, you've added in Scott Hannon, Dennis Wiseman, a year under the belts of Carl Alsner and John Carlson.
That's right.
The maturation. And,
it's a more, it's a deeper defense by far.
Absolutely.
Daniel Sedin, we just mentioned him, leads the league in road points. Steven Stamkos leads the league in home
points. I thought
that
was interesting. Interesting. That's just two different guys. I mean, being able to produce on the road helps. I mean, there's no statistical proof of that here in terms of road points versus home points. But I just thought it interesting that the Sedins play that well on the road. I mean, the Canucks certainly are, have a terrific fan base. And then Stamkos and St. Louis have been really good at home. Just interesting. That's just throw it out there.
I think it's more impressive to be able to do that on the road.
Yeah, probably. Especially when you're supposed to keep the game simple. But I mean, same time.
Skill is the same. Yeah. So if you're as skilled as the Sedin twins are, you're going to be good at home or you're going to be good on the road. It doesn't really make a difference in that much of a difference. Tim Thomas, a guy I really like, Boston Bruins goaltender, leads the NHL in even strength save percentage at .947.
And that's an important one because that transfers year to year better than the other stats overall save percentage because it fluctuates very much in the power play and the penalty kill. There's been lots of written about that.
How much of it has been written by you?
Not much written by me.
Okay.
But a lot written by the guys at Hockey Respectus and Gabe Desjardins and many other writers out there who look at these things. And his numbers are pretty ridiculous. I mean, they're bound to drop down, let's be honest. But Carey Price is up there too. Pekarinen is up there too. I mean, all the guys who were talked about for the Vezina race are up there in terms of even strength save percentage. And Thomas isn't going to be able to sustain .947. I feel like I worry about a drop.
Not sustain it for that much longer.
But the question is, will he drop off and will it become, Boston? There's been some work, I think, in terms of Boston allowing shots from maybe inflating save percentage, similar to kind of Minnesota, I think. But regardless of that, Thomas is probably the Vezina winner. But my vote will. I'd probably vote for Carey Price, taking everything into account.
Really?
Yeah, I would.
What about Price for the Hart?
You know what? You might actually have a better argument for the Hart than you would for the Vezina. And I think that's actually a good point by you because the Hart's open race. Let's be honest, guys. Who's St. Louis got to be in there?
Yeah.
Sedin's got to be in there. They're going to split the vote. In reality, they'll probably split the vote.
Yeah.
Price has to be in there.
Stamkos has to be in there.
Stamkos has to be in there.
I mean, Stamkos over St. Louis. I mean, they're 86, 85 points each.
I think St. Louis makes Stamkos go more than Stamkos makes St. Louis go.
Probably. I mean, that's fair, but Stamkos is running
away. The MVP race is completely and totally up in there. Who else? I mean, you can toss anybody in there.
Yeah, I mean, going back to Alex Ovechkin, you know what I find interesting is that, as good of a year as he's having, he's doing it more on the assist side than he is on the goal-scoring side.
Yeah.
He's got more assists. I mean, he's got 48 assists this year, so he's got 29 goals, which is a bit of a down year.
But I bet you last year's stats, Drew, he had that many assists, he just hasn't been scoring.
Well, but I'm saying he's still contributing, even though that's a sign of a good player, a guy who can contribute to your team, even if they're if you're thought of as a goal scorer, but he's contributing so much. I mean, I guess
still putting the puck on net, though, Drew. Still leading the league in shots.
Well, is that a bad thing?
No, I'm just saying, he's still shooting.
Always shoot. I don't know why these guys never shoot. It drives me crazy. Shoot the puck. It's the only way you're going to score. I know it's a cliche and everything, but I've never been one not to speak in cliches.
You like cliches. Last year, Drew, in terms of Alex Ovechkin's points, because I compare it to this year and his assist totals. This year, you said he has 48 assists in 73 games.
Yeah.
Not bad. Last year, in total, he had 59 assists. So, it's about on the same. Well, last year, he only played 72 games. So, this year, he actually has less assists than he did last year in the same amount of games.
Right. I'm
just less goals. He hasn't changed his game. He just scored less. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. John Carlson, PK Subban, and Cam Fowler all play over 22 minutes per game, and of those three, Fowler is the youngest at 18 years old.
Well, that's a lot of ice time for really, really young defensemen, Drew, because it's hard to address as a defenseman in the National Hockey League. Subban's kind of been thrown to the wolves, in terms of injuries, and obviously his talent level has risen him up in that defense, has he? Carlson, same kind of thing in terms of Washington, really been a ride on. But look at Cam Fowler. We talked about him earlier in the year, but 22 minutes a game. I mean, sorry, playing over 20 minutes a game as a rookie out of the draft last year, and a rookie who
and
fell.
Looking very good.
And a rookie who fell in
that's
the
right.
draft.
Yeah.
Went from, like, the, you know, to being expected
he was
to
a
be
top three candidate.
Three or four,
yeah. At one
absolutely.
Point, yeah.
And to dropping all the way down to Anaheim, I think at 10 or 12.
I was going
to
say 12, I thought, yeah.
And to log that many minutes. His confidence with the puck.
He's playing with Vyshnovsky on the power play. He's playing even strength. It's
his confidence with the puck is quite impressive for a youngster. And a guy who played in Windsor and played with guys like Taylor Hall. Really, really, really impressive. All those guys to be logging over 20 minutes a game and be relied on coaches like Jacques Martin, Randy Carlyle, Bruce Boudreau. Relying on those guys, you got to have the talent level to do so. It's nice to see good young defensemen. Now, two of those three are young American defensemen, so it's encouraging for the U.S. fans.
Yeah. But, I mean, it just, you know, when you're that, sometimes when you're that skilled, you can, no matter, we want to ease them into the lineup, sometimes your skill rises, just exceeds exceeds the plan. I mean, you're just that good. They have to play you.
I agree with that.
I mean, that's almost, that's you know, it's not a bad thing. It's just, oh, this guy's talented. Let's get him on the ice. Now, hopefully he doesn't get, you know, to some extent, Dion Phaneuf, but, I mean, these guys are more talented than Phaneuf or the Maple Leafs defenseman, not Phaneuf, the other
Shen?
Guy.
Luke
Shen.
Shen,
yep. You know,
more offensively talented.
Yeah, these guys are just more talented.
Not than Phaneuf, but then,
I know what you're saying. Let's, let's go to break. Go to break a bit early. We'll see if we can get Tim Campbell on. He's coming up from the Winnipeg Free Press. Still to come, Mike Harrington of the brand of the Buffalo News and Dan Wood of the Anaheim Ducks Radio Network. So a busy second half.
Lots of guests still to come.
Yeah, busy second half of the show ahead. Yep. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. A little Rolling Stones. It's better than Technotronic or whatever that was before. You can just play the. I'll tell you what. If you played the Stones and Springsteen nonstop, I think there'd be no argument. And for Ezzy, we'll throw in a little bit of Black Keys every now and then.
Richie likes the Black Keys too.
I do. Yeah, I know. But the Springsteen was more for you there, Richie.
I know, Drew.
Okay. Just making sure you know. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 10:45 this morning, and we're pleased to be joined on the line now on the Illegal Curve Hotline by Tim Campbell from the Winnipeg Free Press. Tim, welcome to the back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hi, guys. How are you this fine Saturday?
Doing well, Tim. How about yourself?
We're good.
You couldn't bring some of the warmer weather back from Florida, could you?
I tried my best, but it just doesn't fit on those little planes.
Okay. As long as you tried your best, that's all we care about. Tim, you know, we've, on this program, hockey fans everywhere have spoken ad nauseum about headshots and concussions and everything else along those lines. And is the NHL sort of standing by fiddling while Rome is burning on the headshot issue?
Well, I think they have been, but I think I would suggest to you guys in the last 13 months or so, even these guys have figured out that their best assets are in grave danger here, and we've seen this in spades now since January with Sidney Crosby on the sidelines, that if the headshots are going to continue, that, you know, the best players in the game are going to be included with the guys who go down with these brain injuries. And, you know, with Sidney Crosby out, I think the mess has come into quite a focus. It's not that, you know, David Booth and Mark Savard, I think the two biggest examples last year of, you know, outrageous head hits weren't important to them, but the whole thing's been really crystallized, I think, this year. So, but, you know, it's kind of like the, the immovable force against the, or the unmovable object against the whatever force, right? They have a group of general managers who just think putting hitting to the head out of the game is too much. It's too far. I don't think you'll ever get these guys to go along with a rule like that. So failing that, then they've got to be selective, pick and choose. So last year they brought in the blindside rule, Rule 48, and now this year they're trying to pick around the edges again. They've decided that a tougher standard on charging and boarding will do for this time. Well, they'll try to get rid of some of these headshots. So they're trying to be selective, but I'll give them credit. These guys were guys, a majority of them 15 months ago, didn't want to do anything, and I think they've done quite a bit in the last 13 months.
Tim, you were in Boca Raton, Florida, and you were covering, the general managers' meetings daily for the Winnipeg Free Press. Were any general managers really pushing hard for you know, one specific rule change that maybe, you know, wasn't really being accepted well by some of the other GMs?
Well, I think there is a faction of general managers, and we're pretty sure includes Ray Shiro from the Penguins, and I believe Jimmy Rutherford from Carolina, two guys for sure who would, you know, be very much in favor of the blanket ban on, you know, blows to the head. Mm-hmm. Get the head checking out of hockey. But I don't think those two guys found a lot of traction in that room with their, you know, their other 28 colleagues this week. So failing that, you know, they're not going to come up with a total headshot ban. They've tried to work around it another way, and give them credit. They just didn't toss it out and move on to the next agenda item. They looked to see what they could do about making the game safer, and they've come up with some of these guidelines. You know, I think it's encouraging that, you know, they're pushing Colin Campbell very hard to get tough on some of this stuff. Longer suspensions, like just stop with this 1 and 2 game stuff, or stop with this $2,500 fine stuff. Like, let's get serious here. Let's start at 4 games and go to 8, 10, and 12 if guys are going to continue to do this thing. I think that's a strong message to Colin Campbell for starting next year. And I think the commissioner is getting involved. He wants to put his foot down on the repeat offenders and repeat team offenders. And no one came out and said, you know, Matt Cook or the New York Islanders, but, you know, that was kind of the elephant in the room this week. Those two particular entities would certainly be in the commissioner's focus were these rules in play today, but they will be soon. And, you know, the Trevor Gillies of the world are going to have a tougher time wreaking their mayhem, I would suggest.
I think the game would be better without the Trevor Gillies of the world.
I couldn't agree more.
But, you know, you talked about the sort of the hawks on this issue being Shiro and Rutherford. You know who the sort of the general managers were who were in favor of continuing the status quo, saying it's, you know, it's not really broke, so we don't need to fix it?
Well, I don't think there were too many of those guys, given the, you know, the pretty clear message from the room, especially on Monday and Tuesday this week, when they really did most of the work on this examination of, you know, the blows to the head and the concussion issue. You know, even Brian Burke, who you know, last season, I would suggest to you before Christmas, was not a big fan to do anything about this, that you were messing around with what he likes to call the fabric of the game, and you were suggesting we go down a road to, you know, taking hitting out of the game. And those were some of the claims Brian was making in supporting his case, that they didn't need to do anything. But come March of last season, you know, Brian was on board with the Rule 48, the get rid of the blindsiders. And I heard him say this week that, you know, he thinks that it's a good idea to try to get now the hitting of vulnerable players, players who are engaged with another opponent, you know, where that one-on-one battle for a puck comes, and then a third player feels like he has to come in and smash one of these guys, his opponent. It's a very cheap shot. To me, it's completely against the code and the rules in football. Why is it always allowed in hockey? But it has been. I heard Brian standing there defending those items. Get rid of or have a tougher standard on charging and boarding, and let's not just let players roam around the ice preying on vulnerable players. So I think Brian's come a long way, and I think, you know, he was probably amongst the most stubborn or, you know, intractable earlier about not changing anything. So I hear a guy like him supporting some of these changes to make the game safer. I think the GMs as a group have come a long way.
Tim, is there any talk at all about Colin Campbell, you know, continuing on or being replaced? I mean, that seems to me, you know, the discipline starts at the top, and I think Gary Bettman obviously has a hand in some of these decisions, but overall it seems like Campbell's just been so inconsistent. You spoke to 1 or 2 game suspensions. We don't really know what to expect anymore. It's not like we have a certain expectation when there's an elbow to the head or hit from behind. We just, you know, every there's 1's 2 games, 1's 4 games, 1's 1 game, 1's no games. Is he long for the job?
Well, I don't know that, but I certainly don't disagree with, you know, with your statements there. You know, there to me, there's been some wild inconsistencies of the application of the discipline and supplementary discipline. You know, I, for one, have watched, you know, a number of games, and when I don't see things, certainly see them on the highlights. But I've seen so many incidents this year where, you know, the sucker punches and these, you know, after whistles, blows to the head just come out of nowhere, and, you know, one's a 4-game suspension and the other one is completely nothing, and I have no idea what the standard is for, you know, for these kind of checks. I mean, to me, they go right down the concussion line. I don't see what the difference is of sucker punching a guy or smashing him into the boards from behind while the play is on. I mean, it's a brain injury either way. If you're trying to protect your players and your assets, why do you allow any of it? So, you know, I agree with that. As far as you're, you know, wondering whether he's long for the job, the NHL, to me, seems to have pretty strong faith in Colin Campbell, and he seems to have a lot of support, especially at the, you know, the levels of power. I do hear lots of chatter, you know, amongst my colleagues in other cities and people who cover and observe the NHL on a full-time basis, you know, wondering that very thing. But there doesn't seem to be any indication from the league itself or within the league itself that, you know, there's a change coming in that area.
Tim, we're joined by Tim Campbell from the Winnipeg Free Press here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Tim, you know, by law, I think we have to spend at least 20 minutes in a show talking about the Coyotes and the
return
of the
NHL.
Is that all? Well, last
week.
Yeah, last year, I think last week was about 2 hours, but
okay.
You know, this week, you know, we're going to start, you know, the bond discussion. The bonds are getting closer to being sold, people are reporting. What's the scuttlebutt at the general manager's meetings about it? Do the general managers care, sort of, about this? Do you actually get the impression that there are fools who are about to buy these bonds?
The answer to your first question is, do the general managers care? I think some of them do. Probably more GMs in the Western Conference, and then add to that Detroit. You know, I think Detroit's on the sidelines of this matter, but probably in the closed room that's locked and bolted, you know, they're fist pumping a move because...
Right.
You know, it's all going to set up for them. However, some relocation shakedown, they'll be the first team to go back to the Eastern Conference. So I don't think Detroit's opposed to seeing some movement here because that's the only way they're going to get to the Eastern Conference. As far as bonds, you know, the scuttle was actually that at the meetings that, you know, the league has been trying to, you know, do a little arm twisting. They, you know, they have connections and dealings with a lot of people and a lot of businesses in the world, and trying to do some arm twisting. And I think they believe they may be inching closer to getting these bonds placed, but, you know, they're not talking confidently about that. They're very well aware of what, you know, kind of chill the Goldwater has put on the whole issue, and I, you know, I don't think the NHL isn't, you haven't heard, I'll tell you one thing you have not heard in the last month is, well, this deal will be closed by the middle of next week, or, you know, we're confident this deal is close to being done. They don't say that kind of stuff anymore when they're, you know, chit-chatting privately with the reporters and other people. I mean, they think they've got some people interested in these bonds, but I don't think the NHL knows right now. It's a coin flip right now for them, I think.
Tim, is the NHL expecting Goldwater to be successful in, you know, completing an injunction that's going to prevent the sale of these bonds?
No, I don't think the NHL expects that. I, you know, everything I heard this week in Florida at these meetings, you know, would indicate to you they're at least confident in their case, or better, the city of Glendale's case, because this really isn't the NHL's, you know, brokerage. They're the group that owns the team. They're just trying to sell it, so it's not all up to them, but they are even privately and quietly towing the party line as far as you know, they're confident their deal is good. They believe they'll get it done, and then they'll get on with life, which you know, as far as I'm concerned, is just jumping back into another one of these franchise messes. But in the interim, I do believe the NHL thinks this is going to get done, but they have really no choice but to think otherwise, right?
How do you feel about it, Tim?
Me, I don't know that this deal is going to get done. I mean, just, you know, what I mentioned to you before about how we would hear, oh, in November and December,
right.
you know what I'm talking
about.
Absolutely. Oh, the rumors are out. This deal will be closed by next week, or we're pretty sure this is, you know, it's all but done. We're how many times have we heard that? And of course, it wasn't true. And so we're not hearing that anymore, and I think that is the, you know, the message between the lines here. Now, whether it's going to get done, I mean, I don't know enough about, you know, people who want to buy bonds and crazy transactions, as crazy as this one appears anyway, let's put it that way. I think it's a long way from done, and even if the bonds do get sold, You know, I think we're going to see some more legal maneuvering here and wrangling. To me, there's two or three chapters left in this story, and there isn't much time for them to be read.
What did you make of, did you see Scott Oak's piece on Saturday night?
I most certainly did. In fact, I tried to deliver him a very big compliment this week by actually writing about it or following it up. I thought it was that good of a piece.
And do you feel like the numbers were fairly accurate?
Not only did I feel they were accurate, they actually surprised me a little bit, but I checked in with some people who ought to know these things, you know, both at the league level and here in Winnipeg, and I've found that those numbers are actually very realistic. And even though I was surprised, the number was that high. I'm told that, you know, I shouldn't be surprised because that's what it is in a Canadian hockey market. So while that doesn't get you an NHL team on the third weekend of March, it's just another reason to be confident that even though this Phoenix, you know, mess might not turn out Winnipeg's way, you know, the inevitability of it to me has gone up a level if those numbers are realistic, and I believe they are.
I'm going to go long here for a second. Two more questions. First one, there was some talk, I mean, Al Strachan, I think, had a tweet about it, some talk that the Toronto sale might adversely affect the Winnipeg's chances of a team. I'm assuming that he was basing that upon David Thompson possibly being interested in the Leafs. Have you heard anything on that?
No, very little. It's going to be a very complicated transaction in Toronto. The teacher's pension plan that owns the majority of the Leafs, you know, has set a price, a pretty high price for, you know, it's not half a hockey team, but it's only a portion of a hockey team. It is the majority portion. You know, I guess it could put a bit of a chill on the market, but me, I wouldn't worry too much about, you know, the David Thompson angle of that. And I don't profess to have any information on this, but I have to believe that Mr. Thompson is pretty solid in his partnership with Mark Chipman and the Chipman family and with True North Sports and Entertainment. And, you know, there have been no rumblings whatsoever that he's just in that for, you know, the interim or a temporary measure to find something else. There's been no indication of that, and I don't see why he would be trying to swoop in to buy up the Leafs. I really don't. It doesn't mean it won't happen, but I don't see it as a factor.
Final question, Tim. Just you know, out of interest's sake, if a team does move here, whether it be Phoenix or Atlanta, and whether it's this year, next year, or whenever it may be, have you heard at all? I'm putting you on the spot in a couple questions here, but have you heard at all about if the management teams of those organizations would come with, or they'd be replaced by the current Moose management, and then, you know, they'd add on to that group?
Well, I haven't a clue on either, but I can tell you this: you know, with an ownership change, obviously there would be some personnel review shuffling. I would think, again, I'm just talking outside of my ear here, but I would think, you know, the new owners would have a quick but thorough look at you know, the people employed, probably including the players probably to some degree, and do their own review and say, yeah, you know, that's somebody we ought to have on our team, or, you know, that's somebody, maybe that's not such a good fit, we'll go another way. I just don't think it's a blanket in or out for anybody in either situation. I think that True North would definitely want to keep, you know, the valuable assets of personnel that they believe could you know, suit them in this market. I believe in my heart there are people in both those organizations in question right now that would be big assets for a team in Winnipeg.
Tim Campbell of the Winnipeg Free Press, thanks very much as usual for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show this morning.
Keep up the good work, guys.
Thanks, Tim. Take care. Let's go to break. When we come back, we have Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News on the line. It's, like I said, an action-packed final hour here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Tim is great as always.
Yeah, and Tim gives great insight to exactly what's going on the ground there at the general manager's meetings, and we appreciate him giving us time as
nice
usual.
To have him. It would be nice to have him writing about NHL on a daily basis again.
Absolutely. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A couple minutes past 11 o'clock, we go straight from our interview with Tim Campbell of the Winnipeg Free Press to our interview with Mike Harrington from the Buffalo News. Mike, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
We have one?
Mike, are you there?
There we are.
There,
we
there you go, Mike. Out. Thanks for joining us. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me.
Our pleasure as always. Mike, you know, the Sabres are right on the cusp of that final playoff spot in the Eastern Conference. They're, you know, tied with Carolina, but they do have the two games in hand. Is this Buffalo's playoff spot to lose?
You know, it really is at this point. You know, Lindy Ruff's joked with us the last couple of days, again this morning, that it's a best of 12 for them, and they got to win 7 to win the best of 12. They got 12 games left, and realistically, if they go 7-5 or 7 with some overtime combo, that would get them to 90 points. It'd probably get them in. You know, they've really played well since January 1st. They're 19-10-4, and the best teams in the East have really been the Devils and the Islanders, and a lot of the teams around the Sabres have struggled. The Sabres have taken off, especially on the road. They've got themselves back in when they were 10 out, and it is theirs to lose now.
Mike, this is a question that's, you know, it might not be keeping me up at night, but it's something that's, you know, really perplexing me. Why are the Sabres so bad at home? They're 15-16-3. You know, what's changed this year? Why can't they win, you know, on a regular basis at home?
And we've gone around and around on this topic, and a lot of times the answer you get is, well, we try to put on a show and make the perfect play, and my answer's always been the best show is winning a hockey game.
Mm-hmm.
But as somebody who's traveled a lot with them this year and seen a lot of their road games, they're third in the East in goals for on the road. They don't seem to generate a lot of offense. They play a simpler game on the road, and they score more goals. And, you know, the crowd hasn't been into the games. The atmosphere in the arena in Buffalo has been pretty stale this year. The atmosphere has changed quite a bit in the last couple of weeks with the ownership change, and maybe that'll help. But, you know, they started the year 0-6-1 at home, and it just set everything in motion for a tough stretch. And, you know, when they got on the road here in March and really took off, and they really came home and said to themselves, we got to finish off at home. But you're right, it's the biggest question going on right now. They have to start doing something at home.
Fortunately, Mike, there's some tragic news recently involving the Sabres, and that was the sudden passing of Rick Martin. Can you speak, you know, people who aren't in the Buffalo area, obviously people know him as one of the, you know, great players of his generation, one of the best lines of all time, but can you speak to his importance in the Buffalo community and within the Sabres organization?
You know, you're right. I mean, obviously everybody knows him as the great left winger, the French Connection, that famed slap shot we all remember from the 70s if we're old enough. But he was a guy who stayed here. You know, a lot of the Sabres in retirement stay in Buffalo. Some of them don't. You know, Perreault, for example, still lives in Montreal, suburban Montreal. Rick Martin became a Buffalo guy. He was seen around his hometown in Akron and Clarence, the suburban areas, and seen in the watering holes and seen at golf tournaments and charity breakfasts and all over the place, made appearances all the time, really became a Buffalo guy. So this loss was really felt by a lot of people because a lot of people knew him personally, and that really made a difference. It wasn't like an old Sabre passing away. It was a great old Sabre who everyone knew. And, you know, you always in my job hear different stories about different guys and a lot of negativity. Oh, this guy did this to this person, blah, blah, blah. There's none of those stories around regarding Rick Martin, and the loss is really felt by people, and the suddenness of his death was really felt by people. They have a public memorial planned for the arena Thursday, and I really think that's going to be a stirring ceremony.
Sabres' new ownership. Terry Pegula has come on board as the new owner of this team, and he's immediately made an impact. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about the culture change he has brought to the Sabres and everything that Terry Pegula has done in his short time as a new owner there in Buffalo?
Well, there's big and small. You know, the big is they went out and traded for Brad Boyes at the deadline from St. Louis and took on a $4 million contract for next year, which is something we don't think the previous ownership, Tom Golisano, would have done.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just small, little things. You know, immediately changing some things in the locker room while the players went on their long road trip. Brought in a big carpet, $20,000, with the Giant Sabres logo on it, put it in the locker room. You know, put in a glass etching with his statement that the reason for this franchise's existence now is to win a Stanley Cup. Announced to the fans the old slug logo is going to go by the next season. All the slugs in the building will be gone. They opened a suggestion box on their website. They've had 6,000 suggestions from fans about things big and small with the franchise. They're listening to their customers. And I think the fans here felt disenfranchised from ownership previously because they didn't feel they were listened to at all. And the other thing just came out yesterday, you know, things big and small. Well, here's a big one. They're going to have fan appreciation night, the last night of the season. They're going to give the players their jerseys off their backs. And they've invited every living alumni of the Sabres to come back at their expense. They're going to fly them in for that last game. And this is the 40th anniversary season, and the Vancouver Canucks did a great job with their ceremony in October. Sabres fans were very chafed. They had a lousy little ceremony in October, a game against Montreal. And the most applause went to Henri Richard, a guy who didn't even play for the Sabres. So people felt the 40th anniversary celebration was pushed aside, and Terry Pegula and company are going to do it right here April 8th.
Mike, Drew Stafford is a player that I saw play a fair amount in college in his 3 years at UND. Watching him, he played with the likes of, you know, Jonathan Taves and a number of other, you know, Travis Zajac, stood out in many games in terms of talent level, and it seems like past years, you know, he hadn't been able to put it together, and some were wondering if he'd ever reach that potential. This season he's on pace for, if he were to have played a full season, you know, over 40 goals. What's been the key to his jump to maybe the next level this season?
You're right. He's got 26 goals in 50 games. He's had some injury trouble, but certainly projects out to an over 40 pace for a full season. We think there's a lot of focus issues with Stafford. We think Stafford is focused on hockey for the first time. You know, he's really into music, and, you know, he's been in, you know, playing in some bands. I don't necessarily think Stafford's ever been 24/7, 100% hockey before. And I really think he's matured in that way. He knows he can be a leader on this team, and I think he's really believing that hockey is what he needs to focus on all the time, and his play reflects it. He has become a standout star player on this team, and, you know, some of it, obviously, it's a contract year. He's an RFA, and could be looking at a $4 million deal now off this good season, but he's been a different player, and we just think a lot of it is just maturity and focus that hasn't been there before.
We're joined on the line by Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News. Mike, sort of one of the, you know, you think the Buffalo Sabres, you think Darcy Regier, and you think Lindy Ruff. Now, the Sabres have gone and they've re-signed Regier, so he's still under contract. Ruff is not under contract after this season. Do you expect a deal will certainly get done with him? Because it's sort of been an odd back and forth. They offered him the extension. He said, no, not now.
And recently, they're now saying they're talking it's done again. Deal kind of thing.
Yeah, it's sort of been an odd situation there with Lindy Ruff this year.
Yeah, I think he was simply waiting to see what was going to happen with the ownership situation. Was Golisano going to stay? Was Golisano going to sell? Once he sold, who did he sell to? Once the new owner came in, what kind of person was the new owner like? Well, the new owner, Terry Pegula, has made it very clear he's a big Lindy Ruff fan. He said, Lindy ain't going nowhere, was his quote. Lindy has told me he never worries much about his contracts. Lindy doesn't want to go anywhere. He's been here most of the last 30 years, save for his couple of years down in Florida. I fully expect that shortly after the season's over, they announce 2-, 3-, 4-year contract extension for Lindy. I don't think there's any concern about Lindy going anywhere at this point. I think Terry Pegula will take care of him very well.
Mike, do you think Buffalo's defense is good enough to get them out of the first round?
That's the $6 million question. You know, I think for them to get out of the first round, looking like they'd finish 7 or 8 and play the Flyers of Washington, Ryan Miller's going to have to steal a series. And let's not forget, last year they were a 100-point team that won a division. Mm-hmm. And in the playoffs, Ryan Miller got outplayed by Tuukka Rask.
Oh, right.
And that was a big reason. That and their 0-for-19 power play were the big reasons they lost to the Bruins. So Ryan Miller has to actually be their best defender in the playoffs against the Flyers or Capitals, if it turns out that's how it is. And that can happen. He could certainly outplay goaltenders from either of those two teams. You know, I think they just have to not make the big mistakes on defense. You know, Mike Weber's a young guy. You know, Jordan Leopold's been great offensively. Mm-hmm. You know, he lost a lot in the transition from Tony Ludeman defensively, of course. Matador's had a great year and has stumbled lately. So, yeah, their defense is an issue. But Tyler Myers has been terrific the last 20 games. Andre Sequeira has been terrific. And those guys are going to have to carry the load here. But it still, to me, comes back to Ryan Miller. He's got to play like a top-flight elite goalie for them to go anywhere in the playoffs.
Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
All right, gentlemen, thank you. Take care.
Take care, Mike. Thanks very much.
I couldn't agree with Mike more about Ryan Miller. He's going to have to steal a series.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, well, I mean,
he can. He can.
Well, he certainly got the skill set.
And he got to play last year. They were better than Boston last year, and they got to play.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Sometimes it is that simple. And you usually say, oh, it's not that simple. No, that last year was that simple. Yeah, you know, that's exactly how it worked. Let's go to break. When we come back, we have Dan Wood of the Anaheim Ducks Radio Network. Back-to-back-to-back interviews today, boys. It's a busy show. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 11:15 in the morning. We've heard from, so far in the last couple segments, Tim Campbell from the Winnipeg Free Press, Mike Harrington from the Buffalo News, and now we're pleased to welcome to the program, good friend of this program, one of our favorite guests, Dan Wood from the Anaheim Ducks Radio Network. Dan, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for joining us.
Not a problem.
D- Dan, let's start with goaltending for the Ducks, because that's really been the big question since Jonas Hiller has been out. Can you update our listeners on his status? Are the Ducks expecting him back anytime soon? You know, what's happening with Jonas Hiller?
Well, I think expectation would probably be too strong of a word. He does seem to be feeling better and getting more ice time in practice as the days go by. So I think there is some cautious optimism, but I certainly don't think the Ducks can realistically expect that Jonas Hiller is going to be back this season. If he is, though, and if he's able to play the way Jonas Hiller has played all year, obviously that would be a huge boost for the team.
Dan, the Anaheim Ducks, you know, they're right on the outskirts of the playoff race right now. They have more games than most of the other teams they're playing against. They've only played 70 games. No other team has played that few. That's really in the race with them. But you look at their schedule and you see a bunch of teams, obviously, that they're fighting with, but you really only see one easy game, and that's against Colorado. Are the Ducks worried about this next stretch, especially considering they play at Los Angeles three times?
Well, I don't know if the Ducks are worried about it, but I think you bring up a really good point. And I've actually looked at the schedules of all the teams that are kind of in that same spot, fighting for the last couple of playoff berths, and I think all of the schedules look pretty difficult. Nashville has a lot of home games, for example, but they play an awful lot of good teams. Having said that, I do think the Ducks' schedule looks the most difficult of all the teams we're talking about. And I say that primarily because beginning tonight with the game against the Kings and then tomorrow night at home against the Flames, the Ducks have four more sets of back-to-back games.
Wow.
No one else has nearly that many. The Ducks have not been particularly good in back-to-back games, even in the first night. They actually have a better record on the second night than they do on the first, but they're going to have to surmount that challenge somehow and have some success on back-to-back nights, because if they don't, they're not going to make the playoffs.
Dan, I have a two-part question for you. How ridiculous is the season that Teemu Selänne's having right now? And second part, is he thinking about coming back next year based on how well he's played this year?
You know, Teemu is amazing in so many ways, and I believe the season he has going right now makes him the fifth highest scoring 40-year-old in NHL history, and actually that's only three other guys, because Gordie Howe had two seasons that were more productive than this one. But Teemu is remarkable. I mean, he still can compete at an extremely high level. He can still win all those short little races for the puck. You know, his speed end-to-end might not be what it once was, but blue line to red line, I'm going to say he would beat 99% of the players in the NHL, and his hands certainly are still there. The one thing that would help Teemu a lot is if the Ducks could get their power play going, which has really struggled lately, and of course he's a huge part of that. As far as the future goes for Teemu, I don't know. I mean, one of these years, obviously, he's going to call it quits. He kind of drops little subtle hints every now and then, like, you know, this is it. This is the last time I'm going to do this or that. And I've never heard him do that before, so I think he's leaning toward retirement, but I also know from history that he always waits until a good amount of time has passed after the season has over, really gathers himself and gathers his thoughts before he makes a final determination. So I would expect we'll go down that same path during this offseason.
Dan, Selänne adds that, you know, that depth scoring really to makes it a top four group, and to combine with obviously Getzlaff and Ryan and Perry. That line, I mean, watching them play for a long time now together, do you see any defense combo, you know, in those, if the Ducks do sneak into the playoffs, hypothetically here, you know, there's a Vancouver, Detroit, kind of San Jose stranglehold there, maybe Phoenix. Do you see any defense combos of those three teams, Vancouver, Detroit, or San Jose, that can handle that line on a night-in, night-out basis? Because in the past, I mean, when Detroit played against Anaheim, you know, 2 years ago in the playoffs, Lidstrom and Rafalski weren't able to handle that group down low. To me, I don't see any defense pairing that can handle those guys.
You know, honestly, I think with those three, the only people that really are capable of stopping them are them. Mm-hmm. When they're on, when they're cycling, when they're playing physically, when they're feeling it, that line is as good as any line that I've seen in the NHL. The problem is, with the notable exception of Corey Perry, the consistency simply hasn't been there enough. Corey Perry has had a remarkable season, and I would suggest if he were in a bigger market on a better team, mm-hmm. he would be getting some Hart Trophy consideration. His consistency and the way he plays the game at both ends of the rink now, he's developed into a tremendous penalty killer, and he no longer takes many of the foolish penalties that he did earlier in his career. Ryan Getzlaf and Bobby Ryan, however, have not developed that same consistency, particularly Ryan Getzlaf. When he's on his game,
oh, man.
There's no center in the league better. But when he's not on his game, it's a problem.
You're listening to Sports Radio 1290. You're tuned to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and we're joined by Dan Wood of the Anaheim Ducks Radio Network. Now, Dan, coming into the season, the sort of the expected Achilles heel of the Anaheim Ducks has been their defense. One of the players who stepped up to sort of help shore up that defense has been Lubomir Vyshnovsky. Leads the defense in scoring, had a tremendous year, 57 points in 69 games. Can you talk about his Norris Trophy candidacy? Should he be a legitimate candidate for the Norris Trophy?
Well, that's a good question. And I think it was only a week or 10 days ago when I happened to mention during a broadcast that, hey, maybe this guy should get some talk about the Norris Trophy, which typically goes to the highest scoring defenseman in the NHL. And since then, there has been some talk in that regard. I mean, there have been some things written that, hey, let's not forget about this guy when we talk about Nick Lidstrom or Zdeno Chara or Keith Yandel. Lubomir undoubtedly is going to suffer from a lack of reputation and the fact that he plays on the West Coast. So will he win the Norris Trophy? No, I can't imagine that he will. Should he get consideration and maybe be in the top finalist group? Yeah, I definitely think he's worthy of that. Having said that, though, if there were an award for the best defensive tandem in the NHL, I think Lubomir Vyshnovsky and Tony Ludeman might win it hands down. I mean, one of these guys, Vyshnovsky, is leading the league in scoring among defensemen, if that didn't change last night. And the other one is leading the league in plus-minus,
plus
Tony
30.
Ludeman.
Wow.
Their ability to read off each other and complement each other really is as good as any D-tandem I've seen. And obviously, I had the pleasure here of watching Scott Niedermeyer and Chris Pronger, though they didn't often play together. But Ludeman and Vyshnovsky are really remarkable together.
Yeah, go ahead, Rich.
I'm cutting here quickly. I mean, I've never seen, I'm just tossing it up, I'm not sure if you've seen it before. I would be very interested to see if there's ever been a two defensemen on the same team with plus minuses 53 points apart like Cam Fowler and Tony Ludeman are.
Well, yeah, that's a good point. You know, Tony Ludeman has been tremendous, and Cam Fowler has really, he's had some struggles of late, although in the past few games, I think he's picked it back up. Mm-hmm. I think he's feeling the effects to some degree of the long season. But keep in mind, Cam Fowler, too, has been thrown into an unbelievable number of challenges for a rookie defenseman who mm-hmm. began the season 18 years old. I mean, he's played with many different partners. He's even been put on his offside, which is the right side at times. He's playing first power play minutes. He's at times being asked to kill penalties. A lot of the time he's played up against opposing teams' top players. So his plus-minus doesn't look very good. But even with that, Cam Fowler has had a tremendous rookie season for this club.
Dan, last week the Ducks signed Luca Sabiza to a contract extension. He's very young, only 21 years old. What were your thoughts on that contract extension?
I was a little surprised that they did it during the season and for the length of the deal, but I think it's a good move by the Ducks because Luca Sabiza has really developed this season. He didn't have a real good training camp, and he spent a little bit of time in the minor leagues at the outset of the season. But since he came back up November 10th, he has really progressed, and the Ducks are more or less making Luca Sabiza and Francois Beauchemin their second defense pair now, a group that will play against other teams' top lines at times. If they get in the playoffs, that pairing will be really important, whether it's going up against the Sedins or the Zetterbergs and the Datsuks, whoever it might be. Sabiza and Beauchemin are both very physical. They can both skate. They can both move the puck. And they've developed into a nice duo as well. And I think Sabiza being signed now for 4 years and obviously Cam Fowler, who we talked about before. Mm-hmm. That gives you two really good young defensemen to build around going forward.
Dan, we'll let you go on this last question. We'd be remiss if we didn't talk about Randy Carlyle, head coach of the Anaheim Ducks. At the beginning of the year when the team was off to its struggles, there was some chatter that maybe Carlyle was on the verge of losing his job. How did he get things turned around so that the Ducks are right now on the cusp of a playoff spot?
Well, first off, I think all of that chatter was from outside. Mm-hmm. You know, the people who really aren't in the know within the organization. I think they believe very strongly in Randy Carlyle, as evidenced by the contract extension he got in mid-December, when a lot of people said, well, what's going on here with the timing of this? They didn't make the playoffs last season. They got off to a bad start. Why are you extending the coach now? Well, that's because the ownership and the general manager believe very strongly in Randy Carlyle. As for how things got turned around, I think primarily it was the evolution of the decor, which was horrible at the outset of the season. We've talked about that. It has gotten much better. The one thing I would point to, though, which is somewhat frustrating and somewhat impressive at the same time, with the notable exception of the Stanley Cup season, 06-07, since Randy Carlyle has been in Anaheim, the team every year gets off to a bad start and puts itself in a bind. Mm-hmm. But every year has a strong second half, and with the exception of last year, has gotten into the playoffs and been pretty good in the playoffs most seasons. So they need to get it figured out why they always have the poor start. But if you look at the second half records since the lockout, I'm going to guess that the Ducks would be right up among the top teams in the league.
Dan Wood of the Anaheim Ducks Radio Network, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Anytime, guys. Thanks for having me. Have a great day.
You too, Dan. Thanks very much. Dan is great.
Huge game, Ducks Dan LA tonight. Can't wait for that.
That is a huge game.
They play LA three times. Great spot by Dan. They play LA three times. They play Calgary twice. Look at their schedule.
Yeah.
San Jose, they play Dallas. The only game they have, I mentioned to Dan, is Colorado, and he knew that, obviously.
Yeah.
But LA three times, that's hard.
How about the back-to-backs?
Four back-to-backs, Dan. I did not notice that. Four back-to-backs is hard. Eight games.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot. But the truth is, you look at that defense, it's starting to become a lot, as he mentioned, it's become a lot better throughout the season. Obviously, the addition of Boscherman helps. That top line, though, to me, I realize the goaltending issue and Ellis and Emery are going to have to win some games. Emery's going to get some action because of all the back-to-backs.
Yeah.
But that line is what matters. And he mentioned Getzlaf. To me, Getzlaf can be the third best center in the world, but he hasn't necessarily been this year. And the injury, obviously, the sinus injury, he needs to turn it on. Ryan needs to be consistent with Perry. That line's good enough, guys, that can carry them to the playoffs.
Absolutely. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll talk about some ownership issues around the NHL. Maybe we'll throw the phone lines open to hear from you, 204-780-1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big day for interviews on the program. And in case you missed any of the interviews or you missed any of the show and you want to catch it later on, you can download us on iTunes. Go to iTunes and search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, or follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. We post all of our relevant updates there. So if you ever need to get some information or you want to catch a past episode of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, you can do it either on Twitter, Facebook, iTunes, wherever. Send out a little bit of a bat signal as he comes running with a DVD copy of the show. That's true.
Every guest has been really good today.
Well, are you surprised?
No, they're all return. Oh, everyone's been a return guest, too.
Of course. We only get the best guests.
That's right.
Well, I'm loving it because, you know, we focus a lot on the trade deadline at the end of February.
Now it's playoff time. That's so long ago.
Now it's playoff time. Now we're talking about, you know, matchups, potential playoff matchups, and whether teams are going to be able to get it done. So it's great. We're talking, you know, on ice hockey. It's what it should be all about.
Yeah. I'm with Eddie on that one. That's the best time of the year.
Yeah. I agree.
Playoffs.
Right now, playoffs.
Talk about all the March Madness and all that. I mean, I couldn't care less about March Madness this year. I couldn't care less about all the March Madness. But there's nothing that beats the first round of the NHL playoffs. Nothing.
It's the best playoff in sports, by far.
You go to any, you walk in, the thing in Canada is you go into any bar, you go into any bar in the middle of April, and you walk into a bar, the feeling, everyone wants the hockey game on in Canada. I can't speak for the U.S., but in Canada.
What would they be showing other than the hockey game to begin with?
NBA playoffs, it doesn't matter until the conference finals.
Baseball starting.
The NBA's garbage.
Ooh.
It is. It is garbage. It's garbage.
NBA, I don't agree with you there, but I mean, I like the NHL more, but I also like the NBA. The playoffs are great in the NBA too, Drew.
No, they're not.
They really
are. The first two rounds are terrible.
They're awful. There's no doesn't like the first round of the NBA is the biggest joke.
Yeah.
I'm just talking about in general though. The NBA
playoffs.
It's
make Indiana against what Boston. That'll be a good series.
Well, no, I'll tell you what. When you're under 500 and you make the playoffs
year after year, too.
I'm not watching. That's my rule of thumb. If you've made the playoffs and you're under 500, with the exception of when the Bombers make the playoffs, I'm not watching. That's just how it works. Because the Bombers can make the playoffs when they're under 500, and I'll watch them. You see
that's also
saying?
An 8-team league. I saw what you're saying.
Exactly.
Here.
You see what I'm saying? Actually, I think we have a call on the line. I believe we have Zach. From calling from Toronto is on line one.
There we go. Ready to go?
Where we go? We ready there? Okay, good. Zachary, welcome to the program.
What's up?
Hey now,
Zach. I gotta take a bone of contention with our good friend Zach here calling from Toronto. Zach, I saw what you said about me on Twitter earlier in the day today, and the only reason that I may not make any sense on Twitter or during the show, during Six Things, is because I was reading what Ezzy had sent me, and it's not my fault that Ezzy sent me gibberish.
Oh, so we're just going to throw Ezzy on me.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, of course. Would you expect any different?
Zach, I got to be honest. I wrote that at 6:30 in the morning, so it wasn't the most articulate thing that's ever come out of my mouth.
In pencil. On a t-shirt.
In pencil, yeah.
Actually, I thought it was crayon.
Yeah.
What's up, Zach?
On the back of a pizza box.
Oh, yeah. I see you were at Ezzy's house last night.
Yeah.
Zach, what's going on? What's going on, bud?
I just want to ask you guys about Colin Campbell and this whole process they have right now for, you know, doling out these suspensions. Right now they got this stupid system where something happens and then either the guy gets a phone call or they get summoned to New York.
Yeah.
Does this not make any sense to anybody that as soon as the media hears, oh, it's a phone call, that it's automatically under five games?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I was wondering that the other day. You know, they said, oh, it'll be a phone call, so it'll be under five games. I don't understand where those rules really come from and what the difference is between the in-hearing. I mean, what are they doing in in-hearing that they're not doing on the phone?
Right.
Just wasting gas. Like, seriously. I mean, why do they need him to come in? I that's a good point. That seems unnecessary. It seems like another weird step that the NHL places within the system that nobody really understands anyways.
Maybe they want to dress him down in public, and that's why, or dress him down face-to-face as opposed to on the phone. But you're absolutely right, Zach. It doesn't seem to make any sense, you know. If it's good enough on the phone, you're right. Why is it good enough on the phone, but it's not good enough in person, or why is it good enough in person, not good enough on the phone, vice versa?
So what I would like to see is maybe they start off and, like, they start off just hammering guys who are elbowing each other in the head and saying, like, listen, you're out 10 games. And then you go to more of a NFL-style thing where they can appeal. And then depending on the guy's history, then you can lower the amount. But I think this whole system now where guys are starting out at 2 games because they only got the phone call, or 5 games or 10 games because it's Trevor Gillies, I think you got to, like, go at it from the other end, you know, and just start with 10.
I think, Zach, what you have is you have a system that's in the middle of baseball and in the middle of football. And I think that's basically that's a testament to the strength of the NHLPA. The NHLPA is not as strong as baseball, where basically they appeal everything and can appeal it until the next season and let a guy play it for as long as he wants. And then the
right.
NFL, you have a PA that really has no control because Tagliabue and Goodell have been dominating them for years and years and years. So what you have is a middle ground of there's some suspensions, but there's some leniency. But I think your point is well taken.
Zach, appreciate the call. Thanks very much.
All right, have a good one, guys.
Thanks,
Zach. Take care. You can be like Zach. You can get in on the phone call, 780-1290, area code 204-780-1290, if you're calling from long distance.
The
like
appeal
Zach
process of that Zach mentions.
Yeah.
That's something that, you know, Bettman and Fear are going to have to agree on.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Right now, is there an appeal process?
I don't think there is an appeal.
I don't believe there is an appeal process right now.
That's
which is kind of bizarre.
But you understand what I'm saying? Like, you know, baseball, you can appeal a suspension and then play in the playoffs and then come and then take the 2-game suspension the next season.
That's right. If you're
football, I mean, they do whatever the hell they want.
The way the baseball appeal works is something along the lines of, you can be suspended for something in Oakland, get a 6-game suspension if it happens in Oakland, appeal it,
and then
they don't hear the suspension until you're in New York or you're in another major city. You can appeal it
until the next season. So you can play in the playoffs. Or as the pitchers do, they appeal, and they take a day off.
Right.
So
it doesn't make a lot of sense. In football, I agree. They sort of just lay down the law as for whatever they want to do. You know, Goodell institutes it in the middle of the game. Well, we didn't have the rule last week that you couldn't elbow a guy in the head. But now you have the rule, and you can, and so we'll suspend you retroactively. I think we have Gary Lawless from Hustler and Lawless on line one. Is that right? Gary, are you there?
Yep.
Which one of us are you going to yell at today? Just let us know.
I'm becoming becoming an irritating caller, eh, guys?
I like it.
It's okay. Good, you bring the heat. We appreciate it.
I like to listen to you guys. You guys are good. It's a good Saturday morning deal to get in the car and roll around and take care of the to-do list, the honey-do list, as you will.
A little Bed Bath & Beyond this morning, Gary?
Why are you guys dumping on Colin Campbell?
Why? Why would that be on Colin Campbell? Would that be on Colin Campbell, Gary? Because there's really doesn't seem to be any consistent reasoning behind his decisions.
Do you really think they're his decisions?
Do I think they're his decisions? I think they're his decisions for the most part. I think some of the bigger ones, obviously there's some input by Bettman, but I think he does the day-to-day ones. And I think that when there's an incident, we should generally have an idea of how long a guy's going to be suspended for, and the player should as well. And if we don't, and the player doesn't, know what the repercussions of his actions will be.
The NHL has, in an attempt to do the right thing, has done the wrong thing. They've tried to look at every incident and judge it
right
on a case-by-case situation. You can't do that. You have to have blanket justice.
That's right.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Right. I would agree with that.
And, yeah. And they haven't done that. So it varies from situation to situation. And that has brought him, Colin Campbell, that has brought him criticism because they look at it, they see it from a million different angles, they talk to the player, they talk to the coaches,
that's right, yeah,
they talk to the referees, and then they make a decision. Well, we all see it on TV once or twice or five, six times, and we have our point of view. They need to just go to a system where if you do this,
that's right,
you get 5 games.
That's right.
If you do this, you get 10 games. And the point of what's the difference of a phone call or being brought into New York, well, it's not supposed to be a secret what they're doing to the player. You know, it's not supposed to be a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
So if his act is not as severe as some other acts, they do it on the phone. If it's very severe, they bring him to New York because you have to realize they're taking his paycheck away.
Right.
When he's suspended, they're saying, you can't work, you can't get paid.
Right.
So if it's 10 games, you need to bring the guy in and say, we're taking $250,000 away from you because of this.
But as you mentioned, Gary, if you have the guideline set out, you don't need to do that because the player knows what he's going to get.
Well, for sure. They don't have that guideline right now.
Right.
Gary.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, you made your last point real quick. We just got right up against the break.
I don't have any more points.
Oh.
That's it.
Oh, I thought you were about to say.
Gary always has points.
Yeah. Since when are you short of topics to discuss?
Well, I've been listening to a lot of it. Scott Burnside wrote a column this week for ESPN saying Colin Campbell should be removed and they should bring somebody in, somebody new in. And I don't think that's fair. I think if you're going to bring in a new set of rules, give the guy a chance. He has lived under a very difficult set of parameters to this point. If you're going to have blanket justice and you're really going to throw the book at guys, give them a chance.
Couldn't agree with you more, Gary. Appreciate the call.
Good boys.
Thanks, Gary.
Thanks, Gary. Let's go to break. Greg, you're on the line. You're going to be first up after the commercial break when we come back. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment on this Saturday morning before we get to rapid fire. Greg has been waiting patiently on the line. Greg, welcome to the program. Real quick, what's on your mind?
Greg, you there?
Yep, I'm here.
There we go. What's up?
What's on your mind? Real quick, Greg.
Good. I'd like to say congrats to Hustle and Lawless on their first miniature week of completion of the show, 4-6 on your radio station.
That was very good. Yeah, absolutely.
Second of all, how's everyone doing today?
Pretty good.
Thanks.
How are you?
Good. The answer is yes. I will give you an example here. If that is only Coley Campbell there and he gives a suspension and the GM of that team does not approve, does not condone that suspension, he could probably elevate and get Gary Bettman's opinion on that suspension if it needs to be decreased, yes or no, if it's so egregious and so too harsh for that particular player. I'd like to go on a sub note is that I don't know if you were aware of a poll that was conducted. 68% of people responded to a poll on the March 14th and the 15th say that the NHL is not doing a series.
About headshots. Yeah.
And 25% will refuse to watch future hockey games. And I think that is a very, very damaging poll result for the league in general in terms of having a much stronger stronger suspension period. For example, this past week, Vinny LeCavalier should have been suspended for four games doing his best Johnny Canuck lumberjack impression on PK Subban.
Greg, appreciate the call. Thanks very much.
Greg, on that point, I think people don't approve of the suspensions, but and they say they won't watch enough hockey. But unless the TV stations, unless the NHL sees an actual drop in hockey ratings, which I don't expect anything to be significant, I don't think they'll actually take that too seriously. But it'll be taken into account. In terms of the suspension, we spoke about it earlier in the show, and I would agree with you, should have been suspended. I mean, I thought another game, I don't know about four, but I thought another game was necessary there. It was a fairly blatant two-handed slash. And in terms of the appeal process, when you spoke about the fact is that people are going to fall in line with Gary Bettman, whatever he thinks.
That's right. Thanks for the call, Greg. It's time for Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire.
Boys, during an informal discussion earlier this week, NHL Vice President Brendan Shanahan said that he expected the NHL All-Star Draft format to return at the NHL All-Star Game next season in Ottawa. After the debut of the format this season, what changes would you recommend ahead of next year's draft in Ottawa?
Oh, get rid of the All-Star Game.
That would be your change?
Yeah.
I'm not sure that the All-Star Draft can happen if they get rid of the game, just for the record.
That's what I would want to do.
You just want to get... I don't disagree with
that
you.
That draft was the biggest joke.
I think... You know, if it looks like they're going to keep the draft. I think that it should be a little bit less blown up in the media, and they should just draft the players. Just have a simple draft. Don't interview the players, as they're being drafted. Just, you know, have a draft. Keep it simple. You've done it once. The kind of the cachet is a little bit gone. It's not going to be as exciting this year because it was more exciting this year.
Was it even that exciting to begin with?
People seem to like it. Debatable. I think it's them trying to pull in ratings for
week attempt. It's all about television. That goes without saying. To me, anything you can do to shorten the season would be something I'm in favor of.
Or more importantly, rest your best players.
Sure, just take 3 days off. Who cares? You know, nobody's going to sit at home and say, "Oh, I really missed the All-Star game where nobody tries and it's not really hockey."
Exactly.
You know, so I don't disagree with you there.
Amen, Drew.
Thank you. Washington Capitals head coach Bruce Boudreau caused a kerfuffle this week when, in a message to a group of protesters speaking out on the headshot issue, he told them not to come to the games if they don't like what was going on. Do you think Boudreau overstepped his bounds, or was he right in verbally confronting the protesters?
Well, Bruce Boudreau seems like, you know, a very likable coach. He's not exactly the sharpest tool in the shed, maybe when he's putting his words together, although he does like sharp tools such as forks and knives.
Yeah.
But in reality, Drew, I think
ice cream cones are very sharp also.
He was having fun with it. I mean, Bruce Boudreau sometimes just shoots from the hip, which is fine. He's a bright hockey mind. He's not necessarily the most articulate, and sometimes what he says is not necessarily what he's thinking. But I thought here it was a little bit... He just should have just let it go. I mean, people care enough to protest, so let him protest. Not harmful.
Has he?
Yeah, the Capitals PR staff probably didn't like that, or, you know, the marketing department, whatever, both. But I agree with Richie. What I like about Bruce Boudreau, and John Tortorella in New York is like this too, he speaks his mind. I like that he speaks his mind. I like a guy, even if, you know, it's not necessarily the best thing from a PR perspective. He's basically saying, if you don't like fighting, you don't like aggression, you don't like this, just don't watch hockey. We have fans that will gladly watch us play. So I have no problem with it, really. But, yeah, I guess, you know, a little censor button would have been appropriate there.
Like the button we use on you every week.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Larry Brooks of the New York Post wrote a column this week lamenting the lack of atmosphere at New York Rangers home games. In the article, he said that real fans are being priced out, and in their place, the fans are dilettantes, concierge fans who will be out on the town, not in on Henrik Lundqvist, Ryan Callahan, and Mark Stahl. Besides being one of the best sentences ever written, he does back it up by saying the Rangers are under 500 at home this season. In big, quote-unquote, big-ticket cities like New York and Toronto, does a home ice advantage really exist?
Well, I'm sure the stats would dictate that it does exist, Drew, but I understand his point. And I haven't been to New York, but I've heard from people who have gone. It's a great atmosphere, but it's especially great in the upper deck where all the true fans are. Apparently, it's just they're the loudest. They make the arena loud. And you watch some of the Rangers games, and the tickets are all sold, but some of those purple seats are open. So I think his point's well taken, and I agree with it. They're pricing out the common fan. I agree. But the New York pricing is crazy. The New York Knicks are raising prices by 47% next
year. I think it's happening to the Rangers also.
So, I mean, you're trying to price out the normal fan, of course, but that seems to be the way it is these days. I mean, the normal fan can afford tickets to baseball, and he can afford tickets to the NFL, because the NFL is only 8 times a year,
right.
9 times a year, and baseball, you can get a cheap ticket.
You can't even get that cheap a baseball ticket anymore. The days of getting a $6 baseball ticket are long gone.
Right, but I mean, you get for 10, 12 bucks.
You're right, but I mean...
a movie. But in NHL, I mean, some cities price them reasonably. Like Ottawa's pretty reasonably priced. Winnipeg, hopefully, if they get a team, here we get a team, will be reasonably priced.
Yeah.
But New York and Toronto, you're right, It's out of control.
And guys, this was obviously probably, I didn't see this article, but it must have been written earlier this week, because the Rangers won a couple home games. They're actually a game above 500 at home, so they're not under 500 like Buffalo. But these are different cities. I mean, New York and Toronto, of course, they're still a home ice advantage. Maybe they're not as passionate as, you know, they are in Philly or Pittsburgh. But
there's passion. There's not as loud because they're in suits.
Yeah.
I don't think that, but I think or there might be. I don't think there's as many real hardcore hockey fans as there are. They're in the upper deck, the hardcores. But I think
the Rangers have a hardcore base.
Even in the lower bowls, you think?
Well, if they can afford it.
Well, and how
some
many of
them? Yeah,
how many
some
of them can afford it?
That's still lots of hardcore Rangers. You know.
Very quickly, last question and wrap up a shortened version today. NHL.com had a very interesting article this week on the hockey life and times of Red Wings defenseman Brian Rafalski. It was not until he spent 1 year playing in Sweden and 3 more playing in Finland that he finally got an opportunity to play in the NHL.
With the Devils.
Yes, thank you. Once in the NHL, we all know how prolific of a player he has been. When discussing the best defenseman of this generation, where will Brian Rafalski land?
It's a good question, Richie, because really he's a little underrated. He's not, I mean, let's calm down, first of all. He played with Scott Stevens, won some cups. Does he have 3 cups now?
Yeah.
2 cups or
3?
He's got 3. Wow. He's not. Let's not get carried away again.
But let's not get crazy, Drew.
He's a very good defenseman. Very good defenseman who, you know, kudos to the Devils for back in the day finding this guy and bringing him from the Finnish league. But he's not in the league. He's not in the same league as Pronger, Niedermeyer, or Lidstrom.
Yes.
That's for sure.
But he's in the tier below, probably. Okay. Close to it, you can argue. But his puck moving ability has been amazing. His skating, he's smart. He's actually a terrific interview.
Well, that's maybe why they wrote the article
and
about
Richie
him, because such a good interview.
One of those small defensemen, like Tobias Enstrom, hopefully he develops the physical game, because Rafalski's a small guy. And
Marty Berger saved a lot of years on his career.
Yep. Let's quickly go to Cheers and Jerris.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And Jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stinks like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Ezra, Cheers and Jerris very quickly.
I'm gonna cheer Kim Davis, commissioner of the MJHL, for the punishment that he handed down in the MJHL. I thought, you know, he might have given more games to the assistant coaches, but I thought the 40 game suspension he gave to the player was a good move, and it sends a good message to fans and players in Manitoba.
I'm cheering Jerome Iginla, because he has absolutely been on fire. He has taken this Flames team on his back.
32 goals.
No excuses. And his one-timer, him and Steven Stamkos' one-timer, they remind me of Brett Hull. The way Iginla's been shooting that puck lately, he's been a pleasure to watch. Amazing player, amazing human being. Just what's good about the game?
Nicely put. I'm going to wrap up Cheers and Jerris this week. I'm going to send our cheers to Michael Farber, senior writer for Sports Illustrated, and a colleague on TSN. He announced he's taking a leave of absence. He's undergoing some treatment for some cancer that was discovered. So we're going to send our best to Michael Farber and hope that he's
get well soon.
He can be back writing about hockey, because he is one
of
the premier writers in this game, and we need him back doing what he does best, and that's writing. Big thank you to everybody who joined us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guests were Anthony Sanfilippo of the Delaware County Daily Times, Tim Campbell of the Winnipeg Free Press, Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News, and Dan Wood of the Anaheim Ducks Radio Network. In case you missed any of this program, it'll be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. We always want to hear from you throughout the course of the week. Keep checking back to IllegalCurve.com, where we have our new daily feature about everything that's going on regarding the Phoenix Coyotes' move to Winnipeg. And until next Saturday morning here on Sports Radio 1290, we encourage you to stay tuned for the best in sports programming. And until next Saturday, good night and good luck.